so far. So we've seen that the question of what the Isser of Los Achmod is, just in terms of the details, we find probably, say, three views in Rishonim. And what are the three views? Anyone help me out? How do I violate Los Achmod? Sorry? Well, according to Rambam, I purchase it, right? So what's the difference here in any other purchase? Because I pushed the guy so much. It wasn't something that he wanted to sell, nor did I bowl him over with my wonderful offer. I just hacked him a chinik so much that he decided eventually he's going to sell it, even though he really doesn't want to part with it. So that's the Rambam's conception. What's the Ravid's conception? So it's not that you sold it, but that what? But that, well, it's not exactly theft. It seems to be in the theft continuum, but it's comparable to theft, but essentially the difference is that I did pay for it. The guy wasn't willing to sell it to me, but I took the item and left the money.
You know, like you said, that if you buy convenience, even if you need to use it, what works for this? It's
like right, so therefore, if he actually decides to sell it to you, so then it sounds like for the Ravid that wouldn't be the issue. You take it without him deciding to sell it to you. While the Rambam's view is that the guy does sell it to you, but he sold it to you because he drove him so crazy. And the third view that you find in the Rishonim, primarily is the first day in Tosfos in the Sanhedrin, a few others also, Ramban and Chumash sounds like this, and Sajimon sounds like this, is that it's only if you get it without paying for it. Even though from our Gemara, Bav Metzia and Avhei, which is how we get onto this whole topic, it sounds like that's a misconception, it sounds like that's a fallacy, because the Gemara sounds like it's saying, oh, those foolish people, they think you only violate Los Achmod if you don't pay for it. So there are some Rishonim, and there's some human Tosfos that said, yeah, that's taka what it is, they're right, those people are not so foolish. If you don't pay for it, you're in violation of Los Achmod, but if you pay for it, you are. You're not. If you pay for it, you're not in violation of Los Achmod. You probably assume, the Rambam has the most extreme model here, right? So if we go on a spectrum, so the Rambam puts the stigma of Los Achmod on the least offensive action. And Tosfos puts it only, that first day in Tosfos only puts it in the most offensive action. I think we can agree that if we were to make a spectrum, the three different models that we have, so the worst of the three is when you take something without paying for it. And the best of the three is the Rambam's case, where the person does knowingly give it to you, and you're paying for it. And the right is the middle, right? Does that make sense? Well, normally with Zela, you don't pay for it.
Takes it, but then the first one, you take something without paying for it.
I mean, the Tosfos' view. Right. Yeah, so it could be that it is Zela also. The Tosfos has that view, Lava, Lava, Shte, Lava. It could be that Zela includes Los Achmod. Or theoretically, you can maybe come up with a model where you find some way to obtain it where it's not actual Zela.
But he gives you forcing,
we'll discuss that in a minute. It's a question if he gives it to you as a matana. Whether or not that fits into this whole model. Somehow you seem to get it in a way that you don't end up paying for it. So if we were to make a spectrum of badness, it would seem that Tosfos' model is the worst, and the Rambam's is the best, even though he still considers it to be an Isser D'oraisa of Los Achmod. As far as offensive behavior, the Rambam's model is the least. So one would assume that the Rambam would probably agree with the other views. Right, so that the other views are also Los Achmod. So for example, the Ravid's model, where you don't actually purchase it, you just leave the money there. So probably the Rambam would agree that's Los Achmod. He just gives an even more inclusive model. That seemed like a logical thing to say. So that's probably true. It happens to be that the Panim Yafos, that was written by the author of the Hafla, the Rebbeim of the Chassam Sofer, so he assumes for some reason that within the Rambam the violation of Los Achmod is very specifically that case that he's talking about, that you have to actually acquire it in a halachically valid way, so to speak, an otherwise halachically valid way, which perhaps is a reference to what Aaron was just saying, that if there's another Isser of Los Igzal, so you don't really need the Isser of Los Achmod. So the Panim Yafo seems to understand it that way, that it's only when you have the transaction that otherwise would be a valid transaction. The person is knowingly selling it to you, and you're paying for it, and it's a deal that should stand. It's a deal that should be good. So then, in such a case, so then you'll violate Lo Sachmo. Otherwise, presumably, it'll be something else, which is an interesting idea. And we also saw that, essentially, this all seems to address the question, all of these views seem to address the question of what is the nature of this Isser? And how do we understand this Isser? Is it some type of gezel? You're obtaining something which is not yours. You're depriving somebody else of their stuff, which is probably, let's say, a Ravid model or the like. Or is it a midos issue? It's not so much what you are doing to him, although we need him to be there for you to be the subject of your chemda, but it's really about your bad midos in desiring this. And it's interesting how this is reflected, we discussed this a little bit last week, in terms of the reason for there being no malchus. That why does the Rambam say there's no malchus? Lav shein bo maisa. Why is that a little bit shocking within his words?
Because he says you take it.
Right, he says the only violation once you actually take it, once you do a maisa, and the lav shein bo maisa. So the Achronim will explain that really the issur is you're wanting it, but we need some way to define that that's happening. We spent some time last week talking about all the issues involved with having an issur that is primarily mental, primarily in the mind. So perhaps we need specifically for something to happen, but that's not the issur itself. And the issur itself was the chemda, and that's why the Rambam can call it a lav shein bo maisa against the Ravid. And I'm sorry, I'm going to take a question in a second. The Ravid saying that how could you say it's a lav shein bo maisa? Ein lecha maisa gal mizeh. You're taking it. Isn't that a maisa? So apparently the Rambam is about the midah, about the machshava, and the Ravid is about taking it. And therefore, according to the Ravid, why is it that you're potter from malchus if there is a maisa according to him? It's a different reason. What's the Ravid's reason? Because
there is tikkun.
Because the tikkun specifically what? Of hashava, right? So since you should return it, basically the same story that you find with gezel, that if you steal something, you don't get malchus for that because you can and must give it back. So therefore, that's considered to be a lav hanita leheshavon, and you are pater for malchus as well. Just an interesting point about that. There is a discussion in the Chulis Divrei Yatziv, we'll mention again in a few minutes. Divrei Yatziv was the Kloisenberger Rebbe, the Kusio Halberstam. So in his Chulis Divrei Yatziv, in Choshen Mishpat, in Simon Samach Vav, he talks about there is a difference. It's an interesting Ha'ara. He talks about there is a difference between Lo Sachmud and Gzela as far as this is concerned. Or there seems to be a difference. Because we say when it comes to Gezel, so, well, you can always fix it because you can return the item. Right? Well, what happens if the item gets destroyed? What happens if the item blows up? Or is burnt? Then what? Can you still fix it? Is it still fixable? So you give the money. Right? Now try to carry that model over here. It kind of falls apart, right? Is that going to fix your Lo Sachmud? Well, what's the problem with saying it's going to fix your Lo Sachmud? That's what the guy did in the first place. When he stole something, he has to give it back, and we can tell him that if he can't give it back, he should pay for it instead. But if the whole issue that he did was he left money and took it against the will of the seller, so what does he do if the item blows up or if the item burns down? He'll give money, that's going to fix it? That's what he did to begin with. Can you suggest a resolution to that? An interesting question. Can you suggest a way to solve that technical problem? What do you think? Is there a way, according to the Ravid's conception, that it's nitan leheshavon, is there a way to fix it if the item gets destroyed?
You can buy another item.
It could theoretically, there might be such an option. What if that's not our bound? What if, let's assume it's not so easy to do?
Could ask him to be locally.
So you could ask him to be locally, maybe, but the.
For the Losachman part, but like, give him the money.
Well, so you already gave him the money.
Okay,
right, so it's a funny position. So Klausenberger points out, and you're probably right, she asked me to do. Even more so, it's interesting, the Rambam actually writes, now that you mentioned the Chila, it's interesting point in that, but the Rambam actually writes that when it comes to Gezel, so if you want to do tshuva for Gezela, you have to return the item. And he doesn't say anything about asking for Mechila. In this case, that's another difference. It's an interesting point they're bringing up. That presumably that will also differentiate it from normal gazelle. Because what would you do in this case if it burned down? If it burned down, so the practice suggests as follows. That normally, why does the rabbi say you have to give it back? You might say you paid for it. Well, the assumption is that the seller doesn't really want to sell it. So therefore, he doesn't care that you're willing to pay for it. He wants his item. However, what do you think his preference would be if his item didn't exist anymore? If his item is burnt down, so he has a choice between his burnt item or the cash value of the non-burnt item, what would he take? He'll take the cash. So now, because it burned down, the whole situation shifts. When the item existed, we should assume he doesn't sell it to you willingly. He wants his item back. He doesn't want your money. But if the item is now broken or destroyed, so then presumably he'd rather have the money. So that very situation on its own addresses the losachim. Now, you're probably right, Menachem, that because he basically put him in a b'dieved situation, he really wanted his item. So you probably still have a historical osachmot there, and the only way to fix it is by asking for mechila. Even though if it was straight out gazela, the Rambam actually doesn't specify that you need to ask for mechila if you're returning the item. Which is an interesting, this is an interesting issue in Hilchos Mechila and Hilchos Yom Kippur and the like. We could talk about it a different time. But you're right that that also would differentiate a little bit even within the Ravid's model from straight gazela. Dov, you have a question?
Doesn't he say that like for him, like any cases of damages or whatever, even if you paid all the money, you still have to ask for it?
He says that by hezek. That's the interesting thing. The Lacha Mishnah discusses it.
It's not necessarily hezek.
But that's exactly the point. The Lacha Mishnah asks the kasha from the two. Because in the context of Nezikin, he says if you damaged it, you have to ask for mechila. And in the context of gazel, he doesn't make you ask for mechila. So your quizzical look is the same quizzical look that the Lacha Mishnah has. It doesn't understand the difference, and it's a whole discussion in the Svarim. So the Lacha Mishnah and others suggest that, and this is really a parenthetical point, but that the idea of asking for mechila is really a whole different subject. But the idea of asking for mechila, it's not necessarily an automatic whenever there's an aver of an adam l'chaver. Even though the Mishnah sounds like that, but that the mechila that we're talking about here is you're addressing his hurt feelings. That when you commit an aveira against someone, you also get them upset. So you need to ask mechila for getting them upset. So some want to suggest the difference between gazel and nezikin is that gazel, you understand why you're doing it. You want his item. It's nothing personal. But if you're mazik somebody's property without any benefit to you, so that's just an offensive act. So not only do you have to pay the hezek, you also have to do tshuva, ask mechila for upsetting him by breaking his stuff with no profit to you. So here, normally gazel is just about the bank account. But here we see it's not just about the bank account, because even if you gave him the value, it's not what he wanted. So presumably you have to ask mechila for the los achmod, which deprived him of the item that he wants, even though his bank account is still full. So it's an interesting point. It often comes out from that whole contrast of hezek and gazel. Okay, so taking that point a little bit further, so we also talked about last week an interesting point, the question of if we use the Rambam's model that it's all about and this or that takes place when there's a sale. So
should we assume that the seller is in violation of a fleiva losita nechshol because he made this issur possible? And we basically put forward two answers why we didn't think so, why we didn't think it was a violation of a fleiva. One was because it's just hard to say that essentially if you're victimizing somebody, that we should call you the victim, or we should say that the victim is in violation of the fleiva because he didn't put up enough of a fight. So if somebody, Rahman al-Islani, beat somebody to death, so we're not going to say that the victim is in violation of Lefneiva or under Ritzicha because he should have fought harder, so it was only a fight. So you wouldn't say the victim is in violation because he didn't fight hard enough, so to here, because the guy eventually threw in the towel and said, okay, I'll sell it to you so you'll stop driving me crazy. It's hard to call him a Lefneiva. But even more so, even more so, one could say that the Issa Lefneiva only makes sense after you've already, when you're already doing the Aveir. If you've already done the Aveir, so then there's no Issa Lefneiva Losita Mechshol. So here, what was the Aveir according to the Rambam? The Aveir was the pushing him, not the actual sale. The sale is just the clue that it actually happened. It's just the indication that it actually took place. So therefore, it makes sense that you're not going to call that Lifnaiva. The guy who sold it didn't actually enable the Aveira. This is only something that indicates that the Aveira has actually taken place. Now here's another interesting question. So let's say if we look at the whole thing as a question of whether it's about your Mida or whether it's about victimizing the person, what would you say about the following issue? How much do I have to chepper a guy in order for it to be lost? How much do I have to shepherd a guy in order for it to be Lo Sachmi? What do you think?
How much do you have to
shepherd a guy? How much do you have to drive a guy crazy? Sorry?
Somewhat
constant. Well, meaning that you create a constant pressure that he's going to have to eventually do something. Right. So you don't give up until he does it. I mean, you're saying basically it's interesting because that's also. Now that we're talking about mechila, you put mechila onto the table. So mentioning that actually gives a good comparison. That there is a suggestion that Svarim have that the whole chiyuv of asking for mechila, it's funny, I wouldn't think about it before, but it actually directly parallels, that the whole chiyuv of asking for mechila is really about the asking, because the asking is how you make the person feel better. And therefore, it's not about getting the mechila. So when you get the mechila, that's just a clue that you asked well. And that's why, even if he doesn't give it to you, but you ask enough times, Shulchan Aruch says you're eventually off the hook. So too here, this is the reverse. This is the opposite of the mechila. That the asking is the problem, not the asking is the mitzvah. And therefore, if you ask enough times that he ends up giving it to you, so that's the clue that you did the issur. So I think what you're saying is theoretically it could be any amount of times until he eventually gives up. That's when we see you violated the issur lo sachmo. But the poskim try to give it some type of a guideline. And the poskim write that if you ask somebody once, so that's not lo sachmo. Because maybe he wants to sell it. You have no way of knowing. And maybe he'll be happy to have you ask. So if he's a store, and it's all made with machiras, then for sure you're not in violation of Osat. If he's not a store, he might still want to sell. And it might still be a very happy relationship between the two of you. So you have the right to ask once. And maybe you even have the right to ask twice, the folks we're talking about. Three times already, you're not doing the right thing. If you're going to push him three times. And now, presumably, we also mean that you're not raising the offer each time. Because if you're raising the offer, you might hit the point where, again, he's going to be happy to take that high offer. So you're keeping the offer the same. You're just hocking him again and again and again. So then, let's say three times starts to be nisul sachma. However, the post can also point out, Ben Yonah and others, that let's say the person happens to be a very powerful, influential, or honorable person. And it's hard for people to say no to such a person. So the average guy is only trapping when he asks three times. But this guy, this person, this honorable individual, because of his stature, if he asks for something once, it's going to create a pressure on the person. So would you say it's also for this person to ask for something once? So it sounds like from Rabbeinu Yonah that it is. Rabbeinu Yonah describes such a scenario, that if a person who's very influential has a different kind of stature than the average person, who's hard to refuse, so then that person could violate Lo Sachmo right away. And it sounds like from Rabbeinu Yonah that it's actually Midin Nisr, Midin Torah, that is the violation of Lo Sachmo, him bringing it up once. While Selah Chachma, who we mentioned last week, the author of the many Tshuvas of Lo Sachmo, and the Tshuvas of Bital Stern, so he assumes that this is Amidas Chasidus. You can understand why, again, even the influential person has the right to give one try to see if the item is for sale or not. So it is kind of a burden to put on him to say you can't even ask once. But the whole issue is an interesting question, because it allows you a little bit of a thought experiment to shift the parameters here. The person who's asking once, maybe that will create a pressure on the seller to sell it. But he doesn't necessarily have any intent to do it. He might just be innocently trying to buy something. We've already established that a normal person can ask once if something is for sale. So if this distinguished individual wants to ask once, so why should we tell him he can't do that? Now, maybe, okay, in Hanami, he's in a bad position because that's the cost of being famous. You're going to cause too much of a pressure, you can't do it. Just like you can't go outside without getting mobbed by people. So you can't ask people to sell you stuff that's not automatically for sale. But it's an interesting question, because here you have a scenario where the seller could feel pressured, but the buyer is not putting any effort into actually pressuring. When you bother somebody three, four times to sell something, so you know you're pressuring. So essentially, whose perspective do we use to see if there's an Issur Lo Sachmo? Do you understand the question? Should we say it's essentially you're victimizing the guy? So the fact that he's selling it out of pressure rather than his own desire, that itself is a violation of Lo Sachmo. He's selling it not really of his own free will. That's the Rambam's model of Lo Sachmo. But if we say the focus is on specifically a bad midah, so then this person is not necessarily displaying any bad midah. He's acting innocently. It's just a consequence of his stature that maybe it's going to have an unwanted effect. Follow the issue? We also discussed last week, and maybe by now you've had a chance to look at the Derech Pekudecha, the Bnei Yisosfer's essay about this. So the Bnei Yisosfer had a unique shita, which was not the consensus of most posts, and which helped us to formulate a little bit of a different possibility in terms of this issur. That according to the Derech Pekudecha, what was his unique view? Where do you violate Lo Sachmo according to him, where others don't think so? Right, well, basically, that talks about also. But the main chiddush where he differs from so many others is because all the other poskim assume that Lo Sachmo means that I want your thing. I love your Toshiba computer. I try to get yourself to me. So that's Lo Sachmo. But if I just see, oh, that's a beautiful looking Toshiba computer with a blue glove, it's awesome, I'd love to have one like that. So then, most of the posts can assume that's not Lo Sachmo. And we mentioned that fact, that reality, makes it a little bit harder to to characterize Los Achmor as a mitos issue. Because there is a focus on the victim. I have to want your thing. Not just want more than I have. It's not just about my dissatisfaction with my lot in life. I have to specifically want your item, which does make it very victim-focused. So we discussed you could make a mitos version of that, but it would be easier if it was just about general dissatisfaction. And even if I wanted more than I have, because I see you have it, and I want to be like you, so that itself could have been Los Achmor, would have been easier to conceptualize. So it happens to be the Derech Pekudeth, as we discussed last week, does have that formulation that he thinks that is considered to be a version of Los Achmor. It's interesting, if you put this together with some of the political comments that were suggested, the comment that David made, the comment that Eli made last week, this does plug in a little bit to different economic philosophies. Right? David had mentioned that someone said this is what drives the economy, Los Achmor, because people want to buy more because others have things. But again, that only works according to Derech Pekudecha's model. And Eli brought up the question, is doesn't Los Achmor in general reflect a zero-sum philosophy about wealth? That I am only rich at your expense. So the truth is, there does seem to be a little bit of a disparity of economic philosophy here. And that the basic perspective that wealth comes at the expense of others, so that seems to be reflected maybe a little bit at most in the Derech Pekudeth's version. While the more mainstream version is that if you want to generate your own wealth that doesn't come from the other guy, that's fine. But it's only when you want his thing that it becomes a problem. But the general idea of wanting to be rich like him is not perceived as a problem because we don't necessarily see wealth as a zero-sum process where I only become rich at somebody else's expense, but perhaps I can generate my own wealth. So this view of a Derech Pekudeth, it prompts a question even within his view. So is it about my wanting to be richer, why wanting more? Or maybe even specifically within his view, it's that I want something that he has. That I have this taiva because he has it. And it's not just my general dissatisfaction, but it's my desire to be equal to him, even if it's not at his expense. So it's interesting, when we talk about Los Achmor, many do assume that Los Achmor is not about value. When Gezel is about value, I take money away from you. The Los Achmor is not about taking value from you, but it's about specifically wanting your thing, your specific item. And even in the Derech Pekudeth's version, it's wanting another copy of your specific item. But not just, you're rich, I want to be rich. So, for example, in the Sefer Rav Brachos of the Ben Ish Chai, which you can also get online, and I'd recommend reading because he goes through a lot of issues of Los Achmor in general. It's in Mareches Halamed Os Beis. So the Rav Brachos discusses what happens if you know that somebody has a lot of garments, he has a big closet with a lot of clothing in it, and you want him to give you something. You don't specifically care which one. You pressure him to give you one of his garments. So he suggests that that's not Los Achmor, because Los Achmor has to zero in on a specific item. And the idea just you have the need and you want something the other person has, you don't really care which thing it is as long as it addresses your need. So that's by its nature not Los Achmor. And the Shuvas Divrei Yatziv, we mentioned before, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, who was also, by the way, a descendant of the Derech Pekudeth. So, and he happens to seem to favor his opinion, which is unique among the Poskim, who mostly don't agree. So he notes something interesting. He says that if you look at the Derech Pekudeth, so Derech Pekudeth, how does he prove his point that Los Achmor applies even if you're not taking away something from someone else?
From the Zohar.
From the Zohar, right? What does the Zohar talk about?
Zohar, they're saying that you're allowed to covet someone before learning.
Correct.
You wouldn't have it, unless it was, you wouldn't have that Havamina if it would only apply to something where you actually would have the guy.
Correct, right. So that essentially the whole concept that lo sachmur is mutter by somebody's learning, so why would I even need it to be mutter? It shouldn't be relevant at all. If lo sachmur is only about taking away something from someone else, so how does it even apply to learning? Which is a question, by the way, that the Divrei Yaakov asks also, which eventually leads him to his ancestor, the Derech Pikudecha. So he knows the Derech Pikudecha has an interesting phrasing. He says, oh, that guy knows one Masechta, that guy knows Shnei Mochzen, I wish I knew Shnei Mochzen. So why does he give an example like that? Why isn't he saying, that guy's a big Lamdan, I wish I was a big Lamdan. That guy's a big buck, I wish I was a big buck. What do you mean, he knows that Masechta, I wish I knew that Masechta? So he wants to suggest that even within the Derech Pikudecha, it's still about a very specific desire to be the other person. That the other person has this specific item. I want that specific item. Not necessarily take it away from him. I'll be happy with another copy. But that my taiva, my chemda was aroused specifically because he has it. And that even within the Derech Pikudecha, that's the nature of the whole issur of Lo Sachmur, which is itself a very interesting idea. So just to mention within this whole framework that we've seen, of whether it's essentially about victimizing somebody, some type of gzela that we're talking about here, or does it have to do with the bad midah of wanting stuff? So let's think of a few more cases where we could ask whether or not there's an issur of lo sachmur. For example, what if you want somebody not to sell you something, but to give it to you as a matana, and you pressure him to give it to you as a matana? Is that a violation of lo sachmur? What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. It's even worse. So it's even worse from what perspective? And Rabbi Yonah probably
agrees. I mean, unless you're giving, if you take those sachmonos according to the view of that you paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
So making him give it to you without payment is worse.
So that's a reasonable perspective to take. The reason some of the later postmen who talked about this didn't buy that. Quite literally, didn't accept that. And this is discussed also in the Truth of the Kajal of Arav, who mentioned his picture of the Torah library, and a few others, Tel Achachman has Truth about this as well, is that the assumption is that you can't really pressure someone successfully to give you a gift. You can question this assumption. But that's how a number of postmen looked at it, that it's easy for him to resist. You're asking for a gift. Because there's no reason why he should feel like he should give it to you just because you're asking. If you're willing to pay for it, so okay, so then he may feel, listen, okay, you're going to pay for it. You apparently need it very badly, so then I have to agree to the deal. But if there's no deal, you just want it as a gift, so then if I'm going to give it to you, it's my own choice to give it to you. And if I do, then that's my decision. Which you could quibble with. You could ask because, especially from our Gemara's in the second parak above Metzia, we saw that there is a question, sometimes there's a social pressure for people to give you something, give you food or the like, which may constitute some type of gezel. But from a Mido's perspective, so then for sure, like Menachem said, that would seem to be worse. Right? Not only do you want the other guy's thing, but you're not even looking to pay for it. So then presumably from Amido's perspective, that would definitely seem to be an even bigger issue. Especially the Pasuk says, Sori Matan Yasichya, that it's a bad quality for a person to want Matanos, and that a person who wants a long life should avoid Matanos. So certainly somebody who's pressuring the guy to give him matanos would certainly seem like he is well within that category. What would you say if someone is pressuring somebody to sell him something, but not for himself? He wants to give it to somebody else. What would you say to that question? Is that a little sophomore? You think my friend would really be able to use that item? So you pressure somebody to sell it to him. Is that a violation of Losachma? What do you think? So you don't see a difference. You might be right. What, did anyone see a difference? Why might there be a difference? Aaron?
There's no chemda of the object for your own.
It would seem to be that it's not about chemda. It's not for you. It's not something that you specifically want.
You want it to
be. But you don't have a desire for yourself. You know, it's that you... Right, so maybe the chemda is about the desire to have it. So now the fact is the guy is still being pressured to sell it. So if that itself is some type of ben adam l'chaveiro, if that's akin to some kind of gezel, so then one could argue it's no less the case if that's what's going on. This is the way Rav Sternbuch assumes. Rav Sternbuch has a discussion about this in his Tshuvas von Hagos, and he assumes that it all correlates along those lines. It's the same questions when it comes to matana that we mentioned a second ago, has to do with whether it's about the midos or whether it's about some type of gezel. So too, when it comes to on somebody else's behalf, he thinks that's essentially the same kind of question, and it would follow the same territory. What if you're interested for the purposes of a mitzvah? What if you are chomed somebody else's item for a mitzvah purpose? Now you might say, well, what about Talmud Torah? We just talked about that. So Talmud Torah, we have a specific exclusion. Some other kind of mitzvah item. So is it a mitzvah habavi avera? So there's two halves of that question. In order to get to mitzvah habavi avera, you have to get over two hurdles. Now, first of all, you could be right. There are poskim who do apply mitzvah habavi avera to this idea. But there are two questions you'd have to answer before getting to there. First of all, is it even lo sachmod in the first place if it's for a mitzvah? So why is that a question? Because maybe if your goal is for the mitzvah, so that's not called chemda. Maybe that flows directly out of wanting it for someone else. Same kind of question. You want it for hektish, you want it for someone else. Maybe that's not called lo sachmod. The Rav Brachos, by the way, we mentioned before, the Ben Ish Chai, he discusses those two questions in tandem under the assumption that they are related. But Ephraim doesn't think so.
It's not like giving it to a friend at all.
Okay.
It's not like you want to give it to someone else. Like, you have to for your mitzvah.
So. Correct, but your mitzvah is for the purposes of Shemayim, presumably, unless you have other motives. So a person wants a beautiful esrog that somebody else has, so why does he want it? He wants it because he really feels it's going to be a Geshmaka mitzvah? Or does he want it because he can show off in shul to be the guy with the... Right, so that's itself a question. So everyone will agree that mitzvah is l'ha and nes if a person is davka doing it for that purpose. Right, so why does he want the better esrog? He wants to show off how great of an esrog he has, then that's for sure no mitzvah. But if he wants it because he really connects to the mitzvah more, so then it is comparable on some level to wanting it for someone else. You're not motivated by chemda, you're motivated by the mitzvah. But if the issue is that you're breaking the rights of the seller, so then it would apply even if it's a mitzvah. You can't steal from a mitzvah, right? You can't victimize someone else for the purpose of the mitzvah. It may not be considered bad midos, but it may still be impinging on somebody else's ownership. Now, here, Ephraim, the second question is actually going to line up the same way as the first question, but it's still a similar issue. Even if you say that you are in violation of Los Achmar, you take somebody's shofar through pressure. Shofar might be a bad example. You take somebody's esrog through pressure. Pressure somebody to sell you an esrog. And he does. And let's grant that that is a violation of Los Achmar. Does it necessarily follow that it should be a mitzvah habavi avera? Where do you see some room possibly to clarify a little bit? Whereas if you're doing the Raivitz model, then for sure you'd have, or the Tosfos model, then for sure you're going to have a problem. Let's say the Rambam's model. I pressure somebody to sell me an esrog. Let's say that's a violation of Los Achmon. Does it follow necessarily that the item is a mitzvah above the aver? You can make a case that it doesn't. Why? Because it's not really comparable then to gezel. When you steal something, lulav hagazel puzzle, the item is stolen, essentially. The item is tainted by the aver. Here, the item is not really tainted. You have a midos issue.
In the chefza.
Right, the chefza doesn't necessarily have a stain from this aver. You have a midos issue that you want more than you are given. But you didn't steal the item, necessarily. So therefore, perhaps there's room to say that that shouldn't necessarily pass on its stigma to the chefza itself, perhaps. There is also a discussion in general how it applies to tzedakah. It sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim that tzedakah is excluded from Los Achmon. In other words, you pressure someone to give tzedakah, so then it's not a violation. It's always been a question in general why it's not an issur of avak gezel. You know, if you pressure somebody to give tzedakah that he wouldn't give otherwise, and he's only giving it because of social pressure, so then that should also be an issue of avak gezel, the same way like we talked about in Eilu Metzias, that if you pressure somebody to give you some food item, and they don't really want to give it to you, but they just do it because of social pressure, so it's avak gezel. So it seems to be that we allow the pintel yid to speak up here, that you assume that if the person really is chayiv in tzedakah, so then his real inner ratzon is to give tzedakah, because clearly when it comes to tzedakah, we just see from the way everyone acts, it doesn't seem to be a concern for avak gezel or los achmon. Gezel mamish, yes. But nobody seems to be concerned about tactics that make people feel uncomfortable if they don't, for the most part. So perhaps there seems to be this understanding that if their inner chiyuv is to do it, so then we assume that that's essentially called ratzon, and we don't call that a violation of either Lo Sachmud or Avak Gezel. There is an interesting discussion. There's a sefer called Chukas HaMishpat. It's available on Otzer HaChachma, on the Hebrew books. But he quotes from the Evan Yisrael, doesn't say where in the Evan Yisrael. The Evan Yisrael was written by Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, who was one of the Dayanim on the Eidah Charedis, Bezdin, and he passed away. He was the brother of Shlomo Fisher, not our Shlomo Fisher, but the author of the Beis Ishai, Shlomo Fisher, so his brother was the Evan Yisrael. So he discusses, let's say you need a living organ transplant. So you need somebody to donate you an organ. So is that Lo Sachmon, if you pressure? So first of all, even if it were, right, so even if it were, so Pikuach Nefesh would presumably outweigh it. But it's also an interesting question, so based on what we've said so far.
Well, doesn't it tell you whether or not organ transplants are you're killing a person?
So let's assume there's in earlier generations, we're talking about living organ transplants, right? A person who will survive after giving you something that they have. He's going to give you a kidney, right? Not going to give you his heart or his lungs. He's going to give you a kidney or something like that, or give you blood marrow or something like that. So in earlier generations, the poskim were concerned about whether the sakana that the donor is taking on is too severe. And nowadays, we generally assume that the procedure has been perfected to such a degree that we don't necessarily assume a donor is taking on risk that is halachically questionable. So that issue doesn't seem to necessarily be here. But so let's say if somebody pressures somebody to give him a kidney or the like, so is it Nisr of Los Achmon?
So pikuach nefesh will presumably override it anyway, but just is there even theoretically an iser of lo sachmon? So here, based on what we've said so far, what do you think? Would it be lo sachmon? Aaron? Right, so one svar you could say is that it's a mitzvah for him to do it. Now that's an interesting question. So is it a mitzvah to donate organs? That's a whole separate discussion. So presumably yes, in the sense it's a mitzvah kiyumis. There's no question that somebody who does so has fulfilled a tremendous act. Question is it a mitzvah in the sense like tzedakah is, where there's essentially an obligation if one can afford it? So most assume that they don't have that kind of an obligation, but it's an interesting parallel to draw. But what other reason might there be to say that it's not lo sachmon, based on what we've said so far? That your need for a kidney is not provoked by seeing this guy have a kidney. Right? You don't think, wow, that guy looks like he's got a fantastic kidney. I would really love to have a kidney like that. Presumably. If you are, that's kind of creepy. Sorry? Right. Oh, so that's the point. You need one. Right? So why are you desiring of a kidney? Because you have a medical need for one. So by its very nature, that's not lo sachmon. Right? As we've also seen, the poskim maintain that if you want money, even if it's not tzedakah, even if you just want more money than you have because you like money, that doesn't make you over lo sachmon either, according to the conception of most of the poskim. Because here, your desire is not stoked by the fact that your friend has something. It's a pre-existing desire. You don't get it because your friend has it. You don't get the desire because your friend has it. You have that anyway. So that's true even when it comes to money, even for people who have normal amounts of money, I mean, who are not poor. But it's especially true if somebody needs an organ, if somebody has a clear pre-existing need, so their desire for somebody else's is not going to be lo sachmon. And that's probably true according to everybody. But it's interesting that here it's actually more true according to the Derech Pekudecha than it is according to everyone else. Right? The Derech Pekudecha until now was the Machmir. He was the one expanding the scope of lo sachmon. But here, his svara is more likely to lead you to a kula than everyone else. Somebody want to explain to me why? How does it come out that following the logic of the Derech Pekudecha makes this even less likely to be lo sachmon and more problematic according to the other poskim than it is according to him? The way I'm picturing it, if Ryan, you want to take a stab at it? No pun intended. Okay, that's also part of it. He will take any working kidney. But I'm also thinking along somewhat different lines. If you think about it like this, right, according to all the other poskim, lo sachmon is about taking away your thing and pressuring you to take your thing. Now, yes, there's a condition that it's provoked by my desire being stoked by the fact that I see you having it. The Derech Pekudecha, as we've seen, has a different conception. Right? It's that it's not about victimizing you at all. It's about my desire to have what you have, which is provoked by seeing that you have it. So according to the Derech Pekudecha, in the case of the organ, the whole issue doesn't come up at all. I don't want the kidney because you have one. I want the kidney because I need it. According to the conception of everyone else, it's about taking away your thing. That I'm taka doing. Right? If that's the focus of the Yisr of Lo Sachmor, so that I'm actually doing. I'm pressuring you to give me your kidney. Now, it may be justified, first of all, by Pikuach Nefesh, but also it could be justified by the fact that I'm not provoked to do that because of my Chemda. I'm provoked for other things. And we see that even according to everyone else, there is the condition that it be provoked by Chemda. But that's more of a Chiddush than it is, than it would be if you were following the Derech Pekudecha's perspective. So that's kind of a reversal, that until now he's been the machmir, he's been expanding the scope. And here, in this example, it's less of a problem according to him than it would be according to the majority view. All right, so maybe I'll just try to quickly recap what we spoke about. Everyone understand so far? Any questions about anything we've said today? Any issues? All right, so let's quickly recap. So we spoke about, again, the general question of the conception of the Issur that we spoke about last week, and about the Lishna-Iver question we spoke about last week, and how it affects the general question of what the Issur is about. We added a couple of points. We mentioned the Panim Yafos, that according to the Rambam, you have to actually have a legitimate sale, and that if you just take it without a sale, you're not going to violate Los Achmor. We mentioned the question of against the Ravid, that the Ravid says that it's Niton Leheshavon, like Gezel, but there is a big difference, because what happens if the item gets destroyed? So when it comes to Gezel, you can pay for it. When it comes to Los Achmor, you already paid for it, it didn't help. So we mentioned the Divrei Yatziv, that no, here it will help, because as long as the item exists, he'd rather have his item, so it's Los Achmor to keep it from him. But if the item is burnt, so then he'd rather have the cash, so then presumably that's what he wants, so that does fix Los Achmor. And we mentioned that this, as Menachem pointed out, that there would probably be a chiyuv to ask for mechila, which there wouldn't necessarily be in the context of Gezel. We spent a few minutes talking about Gezel and mechila and the like. And then we talked about the question of Lifnei Iver, which we also talked about last week. Why is there apparently no Lifnei Iver when it comes to Los Achmor on the part of the Tzar? We gave a few reasons for that. And then we talked about this broader question of, is it an Isser of Midos, or is it an Isser of violating somebody else's property rights? And we talked about, for example, if a person, presumably you're only going to be in violation of Los Achmor if you ask a bunch of times. If you ask once, you have the right to try to find out if it's for sale, that's okay. But if you're an influential person, then everybody Yonah says you shouldn't ask even once. So we asked, is that Mikra Adin or is that Midas Chasidus? And it's an interesting model, because the person who's being victimized is being pressured, but the person asking isn't necessarily trying to pressure. So that should also be totally on these tzedadim. And then we talked about the question of if you're trying to get it as a matana, as Rebbe Yonah suggests, should be a problem. The Kajib Lever wasn't so sure. We mentioned how some assumed it was totally on these tzedadim. We talked about the question if you want to get it for somebody else, not for yourself, as Rav Sternbach points out, should also be totally on these issues. And the question of if you want something for a mitzvah, should that be oster or not? And if even if it is oster, would that necessarily lead you to the conclusion, as Ephraim pointed out, that maybe it should be a mitzvah babi aveira? Is it something that addresses the chefza, or is it something somewhat separate from that? In that context, we talked a little bit about staka as well. It's also a question, by the way, we didn't get to this, but it's also a question, what do you think about this, just to quickly throw in, what if you want, you pressure somebody to lend you something, but not to give it to you? What do you think about that? Is that Nisr al-Sachman? So that probably also ties into this issue, that on the one hand, you can't take something without somebody else's permission. Shaul Shalom Midas is also considered to be a Gazlan. So from the Gezel perspective, presumably you're in that parsha as well. But from the Chemda perspective, if you don't want to keep it, so then presumably it's also not necessarily within that context. And then we talked about the question of the organs, and we talked about how the Poskim, the Evan Yisrael, and others seem to say that if you ask somebody to give you an organ, it's not Los Achmor. So we discussed the possibility of Pikuach Nefesh, and the question of whether there's a mitzvah component there as well. But also the fact that you're not basing your desire on seeing somebody else's organ. You're basing it because you have this existing need, and therefore that is not probably a violation of Los Achmor. And we mentioned that according to the Derech Pikudecha, that is even more removed from Los Achmor than it is according to everyone else. So it switches the Kula Chumra perspective here, that Los Achmor, according to him, is specifically about wanting something the same way somebody else has it, and that's not here at all. While in terms of about victimizing somebody's monetary rights, that is here to a certain extent. It may just be mitigated by some other factors. Okay, so we'll stop here. So tomorrow, hopefully, you'll finish up tomorrow, Makomos, about Tafu Cohen, and we'll talk about it a little bit. We won't have time to spend a lot of time on this again. We're heading towards the end of the semester, but just to get a little bit of a taste, it's a good ending for the first parak sugyas, and also it's an important companion piece to Yachloku, to the sugyas that we started with, some of the basic monetary issues. So God willing, we'll get a little bit of an exposure to that sugya before the semester comes to a close. So we'll daven mincha here. Is that good? All right. Do we have somebody who wants to lead us?
I'll pass.
I think Avi davened last time. So we'll Shlomo, since you were the first one to speak up. I'm sure you have a shakaho.